Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
I'm still shaking right now. I'm so honored to be included in the draft class.
A division of Bell Media.
You're listening to a special summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The terrific slap shot right down the slot
on Sports Radio 1290.
p.m. in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on this beautiful Thursday, August 11th, filling in for Drew Mandel in the host chair. I'm Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and, of course, by producer Tim.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're joined on the hotline by Jim Fox, color commentator and returning guest from the Los Angeles Kings. Jim, how are you tonight?
Doing just fine. Doing great. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. Of course, one thing about the Los Angeles Kings, there hasn't really been a lack of things to talk about this offseason as compared to a bunch of other teams, so might as well delve right into it and ask you first off, can you give us a little bit of an update on the Drew Doughty negotiations?
I probably cannot give you anything new.
Yeah.
Other than they're trying to work things out. I think the Kings are willing to go as high as needed as long as Drew extends the contract as long as possible, and as you would say, buy if the Kings could buy up some unrestricted free agent years from Drew, after the point he would normally turn an unrestricted free agent. If the contract ended up being longer than that, then I think the Kings would be willing to up the ante. Drew and his representatives want to keep it a little shorter term so that the contract ends upon free agency, unrestricted, then I think the Kings are not willing to go, higher on a per-season basis. So I think that's the sticking point right now. And Drew has the rights that he has, and the Kings are trying to make sure they lock him up as long as possible. A lot of teams have been doing, and I think that's where they're stuck right now.
Jim, it's interesting because, the leverage of a guy like Drew Doughty or in Winnipeg here with a guy like Zach Bogosian, it's pretty limited from the player's point of view. Do you see it possibly trickling into October that he's not yet signed?
Well, as far as I'm aware, the only power, if you want to call it, mm-hmm. he has is to withhold his services.
Yeah.
That's about all he can do because he still maintains, he is a King's property.
Right.
That doesn't change. He can entertain offers from other teams. Obviously, that is not done very much. So basically, the only thing he can do is not show up. And, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. I'm a former player. I'm not for it. At the same time, he does not have a contract. And, if you were willing to withhold his services, right now that's probably his biggest bargaining chip. I don't think any player wants to do that. I think, though, it is a last resort. And if that's what happens, that's what happens.
I remember last time you were on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we were heading into the playoffs, and you were mentioning that the LA Kings could really use a top six forward. So having said that, how important is the addition of Mike Richards to this team?
I think it's huge. I don't know how to I don't think I can overvalue it at all. I think that it's just the exact type of player the Kings need in that he can put up offensive numbers. He's done that. There's no question whatsoever there. Yet he does bring a grit. He brings a leadership. He brings ability to kill penalties, take faceoffs, be an agitator at times for the other team's top players because he'll be getting top ice time. Add to that Simon Gagné, whose numbers have dropped recently, but I don't think there's any question he'll play in the top six for the Kings. So I think it's a completely different team than we talked about in the playoffs. I know there's only been really, basically, I guess you would say, two additions up front, and there was a subtraction with Wayne Simmonds going over in the trade, but I think style of player and veteran nature of the player proven what they've, they've proved what they've done in the past offensively. The way I look at the Kings right now, if everything goes normal, I think they're, no question, they're a playoff team. In the past, I would have to say, this has to go right. This has to go right. If this goes right, that. So I think they've gone up another notch. And like I say, if everything goes normal, if everyone just has a normal year, doesn't have to be a career year, just a normal year, I think they're pretty much set in the playoffs.
All right. You spoke about the Kings adding Simon Gagné in the offseason, and they trade away Ryan Smith. Do you see Simon Gagné producing approximately the same amount of offense as Ryan Smith did last season?
Yes, I do. I do see that. I know Simone's numbers have been down recently, although at the end of last year the numbers came back and he had decent numbers in the playoffs, almost a point per game. So, yes, I would imagine that would be the case, although it would be done, as I'm sure we're all aware, in a different manner.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Smith below the circles in the offensive zone, that's where he gets his work done. I think with Gagne, you see him more of an attacking player, although because of his size and his skating strength, he can play any style of game. You know, he's a strong skater. He always has been, so that doesn't limit him at all. But he can be more of a danger on attack than, say, Ryan Smith, who is more of a grinding in the corner, below the circles type of player. So I do expect Gagne to have at least 20 goals. I do expect him to be up there 50, 60 points and do it in a different way than Ryan Smith did.
We're joined by Jim Fox, color commentator for the Los Angeles Kings. Jim, the first-round series with the Kings playing without Anze Kopitar was a lot closer than many people thought it would be. You know, looking at that division right now, and, you know, Anaheim is about the same as they were before they added Cogliano. Dallas is a younger team, and Phoenix has got significantly worse with their goaltending situation. With the changes that San Jose and L.A. have made respectively this offseason, who do you think's the better team?
That's a great question. Are you asking San Jose Kings?
Yeah.
I still think they're more proven, being the Sharks. I think they still have, I know they've made dramatic changes too, but they're more proven as a unit than I would consider the Kings at, because the two cogs of the Kings would be Kopitar in the past and then someone else. Usually a Dustin Brown falls in there. I think right now it might go Kopitar, Richards, Gagne, you know. So the two guys that have been added will be key elements in the offense, and I think they fell in real high on the top six forward issue. Although the way the Kings did it last year with Kopitar in the lineup, even with them there, was to have so much balance that even the third-line guys would be chipping in with 16, 17, 18. Jarrett Stoll gets to drop down a notch now and play a third-line center role, which might make him an even more effective player. His face-offs, just his skating ability to get around the ice. He's not an agitator by any means, and a lot of third-line centers are, but I think it's just a better fit for Jarrett, and he may end up having a better year. But having said all that and stirring the pot and doing it, I still think San Jose, their guys are still there. It's Thornton. Mm-hmm. It's Boyle. None of their top three or five have moved, or really no additions in that area. Maybe you make an argument with if he's going to have a great year, those types of things coming over. I really do. I love the addition of Brent Burns.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he is a powerhouse defenseman. I still think he has a lot to learn. I think he was able to do certain things in Minnesota because he was the guy. I think he'll get a chance to watch Dan Boyle and the way he operates offensively. But I think with Burns, he does it at both sides. So I give San Jose the edge now, but... And I've been thinking about this the last couple days. By no means would I think the Kings are a favorite. But if the Kings made it to the Stanley Cup Finals this year, I would not be surprised.
We'd imagine.
I can't say that in the past. I can't say that in the past 15 years. I'm not saying they're a favorite, so I'm trying to clarify. I'm not saying they're a favorite to go to the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, if everything goes normal now, I think they're a solid team in the playoffs, and some people may say that doesn't mean... In the West, that means a lot. If you can be top eight in the West, that means you're a real good team. So I think if everything goes normal, they're top eight. If they get some career years and they get some bounce backs and they get a little bit more offense, they get a player at the trade deadline, then it wouldn't surprise me for them to go all the way.
I think in this room we agree with you, Joe. I think there's a lot of potential for not only getting into the playoffs, but being a very, very dangerous team.
Yeah, they've made the steps in the last couple of years, and they've gotten there. And they've gotten into the playoffs just by, squeaking in a couple of years in a row, and by no means were the favorites. You were talking about the Vancouver series. The way they're able to do that, guys, is just the foundation defensively has been so strong that to kind of just grind out a couple wins here and there. Offensively, they were overmatched against the Canucks, and San Jose. Canucks a couple years ago, San Jose this year, they were overmatched offensively. But they were able to grind out a few things, and then all of a sudden you find yourself, you got a couple wins, and you have a chance to win a series. Of course, they didn't have enough to do that. a couple years ago against Vancouver and this past year against San Jose. But because of that defensive structure, they're there. Now, of course, now the challenge is to add the pieces they have without taking away any of that defensive structure. I still would like to see, and I think even Terry Murray would, you know, I haven't talked to him about this yet, but I still think he would be for just a little bit more of an opening up, because now he believes he has the guys that can do it two-way.
Right.
But now those two-way guys have an offensive upside that I don't think Terry Murray has had since he's been coach here with the Kings.
Jim, general manager Dean Lombardi was obviously quite frustrated with Steve Tambellini and his non-disclosure of a couple of injuries, both to Gilbert Brulé and Colin Fraser. Do you think that Lombardi's frustration with the Oilers was justified?
That's a tough one because, you know, I'm not involved in, and to be honest, guys, and maybe I should know this, and now that I'm answering the question, I'll look into it a little bit more, but, you know, I don't know all the rules and restrictions and what happens on a trade and what do you have to do, what's the physical, those, I'm not aware of that, so I'm speaking without, you know, any true knowledge of the specifics and policies and rules and guidelines. You know, having said that, though, it happened twice in a row.
Yep.
Where there was, you know, a concern about the physical health of a player once it did happen. I think there was more knowledge about Brulé than Fraser, but, I'm not sure of that either. So, you know, it's something that I think you do to protect yourself. That's all. I know there were some, I guess, fairly colorful statements given by Dean, but I think he's just trying to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big part, as far as I can tell, you know, it was Ryan Smith that led this whole thing. He asked for the trade, and once that happened, I think the Kings, maybe their major mindset was, okay, we have a chance to reduce some salary here under the cap and get in some other pieces, because Ryan was eating up a fairly sizable part of that cap, and again, he does bring some things. I mean, Ryan Smith brings some offense still, and he played last year a couple times. I don't even know if it's out yet. He played with some fairly serious injuries last year and kept plugging along. So this guy's got a big heart, and he can play under a lot of different circumstances. But, you know, when he left, it opened up some room. And I think that was the major motivation for the Kings once they were, you know, placed in a situation where they had to get rid of Ryan. Who they got in return was probably secondary. But then when it's twice in a row it happens that you get a guy that's, you know, not cleared to play, that's a concern, and you have to protect yourself.
We mentioned Mike Richards earlier. Obviously, to acquire a player of that caliber, they're going to have to give up something in top prospect Braden Schenn. What do you see as the ceiling for Braden Schenn?
I think when they drafted him, I think they had him slotted as a third-line NHL center. You know, a guy who could play, you know, step in a little offense, play a gritty style. You know, he's known for leadership. He likes the physicality of the game. He doesn't shy away from that. Not the biggest guy by any means, but he doesn't shy away. But I think the slot was third-line center. I think that probably changed a little bit into a second-line center, you know, with the last year he had in junior and the way he dominated at the World Juniors offensively. But, you know, so I think the upside is pretty good for Braden. I still put him probably in today's NHL at 65, 70 points, which is real good nowadays.
Sure is. Yeah.
You know, that puts you into a class where a lot of players can't do that. I don't think you'll see that for a couple of years, but, you know, I don't, at this point, I don't believe, and Braden will love to hear this, and I'm sure any player who, at this point, I don't think he'll reach the status of a Mike Richards.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have similarities in his game with Richards' game. But I think, you know, in all honesty, guys, the Kings had to do it now. I mean, you can wait and you can wait and you can wait. You can stockpile prospects, and that was part of the plan. Dean Lombardi had that plan. But he knew there would be a day when he had to pull the trigger on something that was pretty significant. And I agree that the time is right here. If you believe in the window aspect, and that teams only have a 2 or 3 or 4 year window, I think the Kings are in that window now because it shifts with salary caps and players are coming in and out. And we saw what happened with Chicago when they won. They had to just completely dismantle their team. You do have windows, I believe, and the Kings are in that window, and I think that's the reason they went out and they sacrificed youth and they got a proven guy.
That segues well into our last question, Jim. Dean Lombardi, you know, you see a lot of GMs, whether it be Brian Burke or certain other GMs, maybe try to rebuild on the fly. Can you speak to the job that Dean Lombardi's done with, you know, a very patient approach, stockpiling prospects, and as you just said, you know, being opportunistic? It seems like lots of GMs maybe don't have that patience and aren't able to implement their plan as they set out to originally.
Well, yeah, you know, you have to have the patience. There's no question. I will admit, though, the Kings tried to do the, you know, like the build on the fly, as you stated it, for so many years in a row. Mm-hmm. But that was their, that was what they were trying to do. When they made the playoffs, they were a low seed. When they didn't, you know, they weren't at the bottom, so that they couldn't replenish with, you know, draft picks. And again, I think that was the policy that that they wanted to do. It wasn't something that was being done wrong. They admitted they were trying to do it on the fly. It's very difficult to get a Stanley Cup team doing that. I think you can sneak into the playoffs every once in a while, but to build a team that would be strong enough to win would be difficult doing that that way.
Jim,
now, so Dean had that plan, mm-hmm. and he's been given, you know, the ownership has been patient. I mean, there were 3 years there where the Kings were a, you know, borderline minor league team. But, you know, you get a second round pick, a second overall pick, and a Drew Doughty. All of a sudden, hey, you're looking at it. Your goaltenders start to mature and get into it. Then you add some pieces. All of a sudden, you're there. But the patience was needed. And I do agree with you. There are some times where teams go in and they have that patient plan. They have it there. They write it down and say, we're going to stick with it.
Right.
Then they don't. The Kings have stuck with it. And now they are in the situation where, again, I was just mentioning earlier, you know, maybe they'll do something at the trade deadline, too. I think the Kings still have enough room under the cap where they can add something at the trade deadline. If that means more prospects in a rent-a-player deal, they have the prospects to do it, too. So I certainly like this, you know, the situation the Kings are in right now, and it is all, like you said, because of that patience.
Jim Fox, three-time 30-goal scorer for the Los Angeles Kings, current color commentator alongside Bob Miller for the Kings television broadcast. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Much appreciated.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go to break. When we're back, we're going to touch a little bit more on about a couple of things we just spoke about, that interview, as well as that Sean Avery incident. And
ooh,
we have to talk about the fact that Timo Solani still hasn't decided on his future.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Well, it sounds like a live version. I hear fireworks.
Oh, that's live.
Hey, Gene Simmons has a key to the city now.
That's right. You can't even get a key to your own house.
I wonder how many keys that guy has to different cities.
Probably a lot.
Like, Winnipeg might be, like, the last city that he didn't have a key to. He's like, you know what? I don't have a key in Winnipeg. I've got one in Saskatoon. You know, are they married? Tweed?
No, I think they're partners.
She's from Saskatoon.
That is correct.
Is she?
Yeah, she is.
Shannon Tweed's from Saskatoon.
From some other things, too.
They were at a Saskatoon Blades game recently, I believe, shooting an episode of Gene Simmons' Family Jewels.
Yeah, and you know why that's relevant? Braden Shen's from Saskatoon.
What about the Family Jewels?
Yeah, well, Luke Shen, Family Jewels.
Luke Shen actually is a good segue for us. If you
there we go.
Into quickly. You know what, Ez? Why don't we do this?
I want to kick it to you, okay?
Yeah,
let's go back.
Go,
you know,
go.
I am the de facto host. Tim knows that. He's giving me the nod. You know, when Richard and Drew are out of town, it's me, Remus, and Dave Minuk. But this is very important, okay? There's currently, well, you know, let's talk about Timo too, because we did mention that before the break.
No, let's do that.
We'll do the defenseman. Okay,
yeah, we'll talk about that stuff after the James interview.
Okay, arguably the only, you know, major move for the Jets left to make is to officially get Zach Bogosian's name on a contract, and right now there are three guys all drafted in 2008. Zach Bogosian, uh-huh, previously mentioned, yep. Drew Doughty, previously mentioned, and Luke Shen, previously mentioned. You've got your second overall pick, your third overall pick, and I believe your fifth overall pick.
That's right.
All defensemen, all with different skill sets.
All right.
All probably asking four different amounts of money, actually.
Yeah.
You know, Luke Shen and, I guess, Zach Bogosian are more, you know, in the same ballpark. So what I want to do is, Richie is obviously, you know, our analytical expert and our salary cap expert, you know. So what we want to do is I'm going to throw it to you, Richie, and I'm going to ask you how many years and how much dollars, how many dollars, each three of those guys should make, and currently where the negotiations are at, in your opinion. We talked to Jim Fox about Doughty, and he obviously has some insight. You know, but this is your, you know, an opinion. And, you know, maybe what we should see as far as what guy is going to sign first, and maybe who's waiting for who, because comparables are obviously in play here, right?
I think one thing is, I think the Doughty contract is going to be, regardless, is going to be an exclusive of the other two, because he's just that much better. You could argue that Drew Doughty is the top three defenseman in the National Hockey League. I think Drew Doughty's going to ask for a contract. Now, he can't ask for a contract that's Shea Weber money, because, well, the NHL, when they sign these huge contracts after the first year, generally don't discount those restricted free agent years. Depending on the term, if he wants to sign for, say, you know, for Shea Weber money, I mean, Shea Weber is two years away from being a UFA. Drew Doughty is 4 years away from being a UFA, because you can be a UFA after seven accrued years, right? He's played three seasons, right? Three seasons, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens in that case is Doughty, if he wants to do like a 3 or 4 year deal, probably can ask for, you know, just under or close, you know, probably just about what Duncan Keith's making in cap hit, which is about 5.5 a year, maybe even six.
And how many years is Doughty and his agent looking for, and how many years do you think that LA wants to sign him to?
Well, I think LA wants to sign him for as long as possible if they can get that cap hit down. I think Doughty probably wants a higher amount. You know, probably a higher amount for a shorter term, because what happens is if he blows up and he becomes a superstar like he's capable of, if he hits the open market, I mean, seriously, he can make $9 million bucks in 4 years in the open market.
As opposed to maybe being locked into 5.5 to 6.5 in that range.
Exactly right.
So
I think he's in the six, like, you know, he's looking for six, probably about 5.5 to 6.5 right now on a 3 to 4 year deal.
Okay, and we've obviously mentioned Zach Bogosian on the show before, obviously being in Winnipeg, and sure, we've kind of transitioned our show and our website a little bit to be more Jet-centric. How much do you think Zach Bogosian is looking for? How many years is he looking for? Has that changed? Because, you know, you've written extensively about this on illegalcurve.com, and maybe as a second part to that question, is Luke Shen and his agent looking for a similar cap hit, similar term? Is there any type of waiting going on there?
You know, I see Bogosian as in about the 2.75 range. And I went over this long on LegalCurve.com. You can find, if you use the search button on the right side, you type in Bogosian, you can see my long description of what is Zach Bogosian worth. And I think just quickly before we get into what he's worth, let's compare him and Luke Shen. Bogosian's a better skater.
Yep.
He's a higher offensive upside.
Yep.
He is probably just as physical as Luke Shen. He's a better puck mover. He's a better player than Luke Shen. I see Luke Shen, I think I mentioned on the show before, he's a fourth defenseman, a second pairing right side defenseman, a solid player. He's not a great skater. He's not a great offensive player. His upside, I think, is not that high. Bogosian's potential is far higher.
Yep.
Now, Bogosian isn't Drew Doughty with the puck. Few are. And he's not the best offensive player, but he's got offensive talent. He's a beautiful skater. He's a physical specimen. I think, but at the same time, if you're looking at, like, I have Bogosian based on a bunch of different numbers. I have him, you know, in about the 2.6, 2.9 range for a two-year deal. So a cap hit of 2.75 is in the middle there for 2 years. Now, Luke Shen, could he probably argue for a similar amount of money? He played fairly well last year for a similar amount of money, maybe on a two-year term, maybe. But I'm thinking down the road that, you know, if you give Luke Shen 2.5, for example, 2.5 seems...
Okay, Richie, I'm going to ask you the question that a lot of people, especially here in Winnipeg, sure, are wondering about. I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here. You know, it's August 11th.
Yep.
In your opinion, and people want to know this, why hasn't Zach Bogosian just signed already? If it's a question of, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars or whatever, or years, in your opinion, is it because maybe they just haven't gotten around to finally crossing the T's and dotting the I's? Or is there a big chasm in between what each side wants?
That's a good question, Ezzy. I mean, we're not privy to that information. I know we're up against the break with, you know, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen coming up after the commercial break. But as I think you're probably right now, I think there's more of an issue probably with money than term. I think probably they both want your deal to see what they both have in each other. I think Bogosian might be asking for, what, 3.2, and the team might want to offer 2.4, and they're negotiating over that.
You know, one thing also is to think about, you think that the teams are waiting for all these three restricted free agents from this draft year to see, you know, how they match up, to see where they slot in?
Right, and Shannon and Bogosian, I think, are more comparable. Doughty's in a class by himself. I mean, he's the best defenseman, arguably, at the Olympics with Duncan Keith. I mean, the LA Kings, Stephen Stamkos is an amazing talent. If you speak to certain people in the game, they will tell you that Drew Doughty would have been the Kings' first pick regardless of if they got the second. But if they had the first, they would have taken him over Stamkos. He is a game breaker. He's as good as you're going
to
get.
And by the way, I think we should say that, obviously, you know, you mentioned this, Richie. We aren't privy to know, you know, what's going on with Zinger and Chevy and Bogosian's agent. But I think he's going to sign. I think it's just taking a little while. That's just my personal opinion. But I think that he legitimately wants to play here. I think there have been some, you know, I'm not going to mention names, not in Winnipeg, outside of Winnipeg, saying that Bogosian didn't want to play here. And I don't know for a fact whether that's true. But I don't think that's the case. I mean, he was quoted recently saying that he wants to play
apparently
here.
Apparently he bought a condo.
So there you go.
Simmons has a key to the condo. Has a key to the city. Zach Bogosian has a key to the condo. And we have a key to a commercial break because we've got James Gordon coming up after from the Ottawa Citizen.
Nicely played.
How he smuggles beer across the security checkpoints at the airport. You're listening to the Luke Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezzy, ready to go here?
This has been a great show, Richie. I got to say, you're doing a nice little job of filling in for Kentucky Drew.
I've had fun filling in for Kentucky Drew.
I must say that this hour and a half has really flown by.
Yeah, it's flown by, and we still have James coming right up right now, and it's been lots of fun.
We've got him on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Joined on the line by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. James, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Good, James. Quickly, before we get into the Senators and the spectacle that is Alexei Kovalev, which we'll speak about in a second, you had a tweet today earlier in the morning saying how you initially, you know, weren't so fond of the Jets logo. You thought it looked a little bit like it was done in MS Paint, which is a brilliant line. for some odd reason, it's growing on you. Can you maybe elaborate on that a little bit?
I don't really know how it ran. I saw it initially, and I was super disappointed. I don't know why. I sort of had heard these rumors that it would kind of be that idea. I thought it would be fine, but like I said, it just seemed a little basic or something. Mm-hmm. And like basic is, it's kind of classic, but if it's not as eye catching as you're expecting, you're a little disappointed. But I can't even explain it. I just keep looking at it, and then maybe it was just, you know, the reality of seeing it on shirts and stores and stuff now is kind of like, well, I guess it's all right.
Yeah, you know what? I actually had the same initial reaction. I didn't like it, but it has grown on me and grown on me as well too. And it's obviously all around the city. But James, more important things to talk about. Like, first of all, you know, in light of Alexei Kovalev's comments, can you please tell us which beer you prefer to carry across the border? And can you, you know, can you break down if there's a beer that's easier to get across than other beers?
Well, if you're crossing into the States, you probably want to have an American beer, so you can say, oh, well, it was there in the first place anyway. So, I've never actually seen anyone who would be able to sneak anything past security post 9/11, let alone giant bags of alcohol, but I can't say I've seen that sort of thing, so... I think Alex Kovalev was being a little tongue-in-cheek and trying to scorch us because of our, you know, perceived unfairness towards him. But like I said on Twitter that day, Alex Kovalev, you know, dropped all these bombs after he left. And I'll never forget Chris Kelly's exit interview when he got traded to Boston last season. And he said his few things and then thank the media for treating him fairly here. And, you know, like I said, even beer-soaked cats can tell who tries on the ice. And Chris Kelly was a guy who gave it his all every night. And Alex Kovalev was a guy who was a huge disappointment in the city. And I don't see how he didn't see it. But Alex Kovalev has a history of, you know, this woe-is-me attitude. And he's just really misunderstood. And you saw that in Montreal and you see it in Ottawa. And, you know, if he was so great, he'd still be in the NHL this season. I mean, and that's not to besmirch a career that you know, he did some really great things, but I think everybody would acknowledge that Alex Kovalev didn't live up to his potential.
You can add James, by the way, on Twitter, at Sens Reporter. James, Kovalev, on a day-to-day basis, how was he in the dressing room? Was he respectful to the media, or was he always a little bit frosty?
Well, it's one of those things where you kind of wonder, you know, where this comes from, because, you know, a lot of days it was kind of like spotting Sasquatch when you could actually talk to Alex Kovalev. He would sneak out, he would, you know, maybe talk a couple days a week, and if there was a big game, then he often wasn't available until after the game, and Scott MacArthur, who used to do the round table in the post game here, now he's with TSN Radio, he tweeted after that, you know, that the first day Alex Kovalev came back with Pittsburgh, he had a chance to come in and tell all the reporters what he thought of them, and he didn't have availability, so it was one of those things where, as players become more disgruntled, you see less and less of them. It happened with Danny Heatley, and it happened with Ray Emery here, and I find the media is an easy scapegoat for people who aren't playing well, and you know, it's kind of this attitude, well, you know, the media is turning everyone against me, which I think is kind of insulting to fans. You can see for themselves that Alex Kovalev wasn't living up to his billing here.
James, we're loving having you on because, you know, we thought it was quite ridiculous that Alexei Kovalev was making these comments. You know, why is Kovalev so angry at either the city of Ottawa or the media in Ottawa or both when it's clear that he signed for the money that he wanted for the term he wanted?
Right. And you know, not to leave out the other target that he aimed at, which was the former coach Corey Kluston. He was asked about Kluston and said, well, I didn't really understand his system and it didn't fit my style. And then he says, he gets traded to Pittsburgh, and he says, oh, it was fine, but, you know, the coach there, Dan Bylsma, you know, I didn't really fit into his system either. Well, what kind of system do you want? His system has gotten them to the finals twice in the last few years, and he's won a Stanley Cup. So you think that system works. So maybe, you know, try and fit in a little bit. But I don't know. Like I said, Alex Kovalev has a history of kind of feeling sorry for himself and thinking he's completely misunderstood. It was one of the most hilarious quotes ever last season around Christmas when he was told the whole, I'm being made a scapegoat by the coach, and he says, all I want for Christmas is for people to leave me alone and let me play. Like, it's just, this guy's 38 years old and he's making weepy Christmas wishes. So it's just, he is who he is. The players, On a side note, love him. I think they really enjoyed having him on the team, even if he wasn't the greatest hard worker. But you don't often see players say anything bad about him, because I think he was generally liked as a person. But, you know, I don't get paid $5 million a year to be a nice guy. So you have to perform in the NHL, and that's what it's about. And if you don't, then you get criticized.
Back to former head coach Corey Kluston. The Ottawa Senators head coaching job was obviously his first head coaching job in the National Hockey League. Do you think that he was suited to be an NHL coach? It seems that, you know, many of the veteran players were unhappy with him.
Right. You know, it really is difficult to blame a coach when he did come in and kind of turn the team around a bit. He got them into the playoffs the season before when they were not expected to make it. He came in during the first season when they were just terrible and kind of got them to play for him. But maybe he's just one of those coaches where the influence and the message wears off really quick, because he's not much of a people person and he can't really sell it to his players. I think in the NHL now you see a real shift where you need a coach who can manage personalities more than X's and O's, and Kluston obviously couldn't do that. I mean, we sat in with him every day and had scrums, and he was just not what you would call approachable, I guess. And you saw with Danny Heatley that he couldn't work with them, and Alex Kovalev complains about him. And, you know, those are two cases where, okay, maybe we're talking about trouble players here, but a lot of players after Kluston was fired were kind of suggesting it in nice ways, that there were issues with communication and not understanding what their roles were. You know, Jason Spezza said you know, we all have stuff to work on, and you know, maybe he'll learn, too, about, you know, communication with players and that sort of thing. So there was obviously some underlying issues there, and again, you're dealing with, like, multimillionaire young men that you need to find a way to approach them in a league where it's not the coach's boss anymore. It's more like a coach is a facilitator almost that tries to get them to play together.
Joined by James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, available at Twitter, @SensReporter. James, you know, obviously the Senators learned a lot about, you know, enigmatic, talented, but sometimes troubled Russian players. So, you know, they decided to go out and trade for Nikita Filatov.
Yeah.
Which makes, you know, perfect sense under that rationale. But there is obviously potential there. First part of the question, as he'll ask you the second part in terms of Filatov, but apparently, according to Filatov, the team has promised him, you know, first or second line minutes. Do you think that's a fair promise for a team that's not even signing a player, but signing him off the free agent wire, but acquiring him via trade?
Well, I'm kind of reluctant to comment on that because, you know, you don't know exactly what the circumstances of that conversation are and what the translation is. You know, maybe they said to him, you have an opportunity here to play first and second minutes because just look at the depth chart, you know. It's there. So I don't really have anything to say about that. If they did, then it was a way to get him to not leave for Russia probably. And he will have that opportunity to do that because, like I said, you just look at the forwards and there's room there for people to bring. And again, like, he's another guy where he has the talent. It's just a matter of, is he motivated enough to take advantage of it?
So, James, is that really what you've heard about Filatov from you know, your connections with the Senators? Is it that he's got lots of talent, but it's just not developed at this point?
Well, I mean, it's plain to see that he has talent. The World Juniors were here a few years ago that I covered, and I was covering the Russian team for most of the tournament, and the guy was far, far and away the best player on the ice every game that I covered. Just so fast and so talented, but, like, you know, a bit of a freelancer. He did whatever he wanted, and he knew he was good, and I think he expected to be allowed to do whatever he wanted. So, again, it's just harnessing that talent, and there's so many players I think teams are frustrated with who they know they could be great if they would just buy in, and obviously he hasn't yet. Otherwise, he'd be a star player with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, again, it's another guy. Murray's known for making some of these. He traded for Pascal Leclerc on the off chance that the goalie might not get hurt for a season, and he was injured almost his entire time here. So, again, it's a roll of the dice, and I think they're hoping that this one goes a little better than that one.
This offseason, the Senators did not go after any of the, you know, many veteran free agents available, and their plan is to build around their current youth. Do you think that is a good plan?
As a rule, yeah. I mean, you look at some of the contracts that are handed out in summer free agency, and you kind of hamstring yourself in future years to get guys who can be, you know, kind of marginal for the money that they get. And this is a team that said last year when they traded the likes of Kelly and Mike Fisher and those guys, they said we're ready to take a step back and rebuild, and I think that rebuilding is sped along a little bit because they have a legitimate number one goalie now. But I think they're gonna take it slow and not do anything crazy in free agency and hope that that their draft picks and that some of these younger guys in the system can make it through, and some of their veterans can stay healthy. I mean, their top line is a solid top line with Spezza, Alfredson, and McCulloch. These guys get hurt every year, so that hurts too. But, I mean, they had three first-round draft picks this summer, and that's the way they're going to go. They're going to pick a lot of guys and hope some of them come through.
Final question, James. You know, here in Winnipeg, we look at the Jets, and I think for the most part, realistic fans don't see it as a playoff team, and they kind of see it as, you know, the bottom five teams in the Eastern Conference are, you know, Toronto, Ottawa, Florida, the Islanders, and the Jets. Do you see are fans in Ottawa, you know, clamoring for that eighth spot, or are they okay with, you know, another year of development, not only on the ice, but another year of a top first round draft pick, or are they, you know, are they pressuring? Is there a pressure there to succeed quickly?
I want to say no, you know, anecdotally from what I hear from people, that people do understand this is they're going to do it the right way this time and stop trying to hold on and not go the Toronto way, you know, in the mid-2000s where they would try and hold on and always beat the bubble team. I mean, I think people were happy that they finally said, all right, we're going to implement a new plan here that sets us up for future success. And I think you're right. I don't think they're a playoff team, and I don't think the Jets are a playoff team just because you look at the teams that would have to drop down.
That's right.
We're talking Buffalo that improved a lot over the summer and the Rangers who improved, and New Jersey isn't going to be as bad, and you'd think Tampa is going to be better. And it's just when you look up and down the standings, it's just where are they going to sneak in here? So, you know, it's kind of similar with the Jets and the Senators in that they have a solid goaltender, solid defense. It's just who's going to score goals. And without that, I don't think either of these teams can compete with the top eight.
Certainly an interesting parallel, and will be an interesting year in Ottawa. James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, reporter and web editor for the Citizen. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure.
There you have it. James Gordon's been on the show a number of times. Terrific insight into the Senators. Hopefully speak to him throughout the year. Remember, we're in the Eastern Conference. We being...
Ottawa will be here twice.
Winnipeg, so Ottawa's here twice. It's going to be an interesting
and vice
season.
Versa.
And, you know, the three first-round draft picks this year, they have a lot of offense. They have some nice prospects on the back end. David Rundblad, they already have Erik Karlsson, they have Jared Cowan. So there's a lot of prospects there, and I think there's a potential for a quick turnaround in Ottawa. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We have one final segment after the break. Remus, can you believe it?
No, I can't believe it.
Remus, there's a tweet on here from Eric Music. He says, at a Legal Curve, he's off to wing night to make sure the podcast is up quicker this week, boys.
Well, I'm in town, so it'll happen.
Hey, he hashtags it tongue-in-cheek, but he's looking at you.
We've got to get to a hockey game here.
I know, we got a hockey game.
It's already underway.
The Believe in the Goal Foundation game was underway at 7 o'clock. We are going to be there, leaving for that game at the top of the hour. One more segment after the break. Arctic Monkeys?
Yeah.
Ah, not bad.
Were they Lola?
I did see them. Their set was delayed because of rain, so it was only 45 minutes as opposed to an hour. They're pretty good. I'm not as into them as Tim. I know that Tim's seen them a number of times, but...
I like them, too.
I would have loved to see the Foo Fighters. I love the Foo Fighters.
Okay, go on YouTube to the Lollapalooza page where they play My Hero in, like, this torrential downpour. It was crazy.
I'll be watching.
You know what? We talked about it earlier. We haven't yet talked about the Sean Avery arrest.
Yeah.
It's good
to see that he's having a good summer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a really productive player on the ice, and he's worth all the headache that he provides the Rangers with, especially with, you know, their talent acquisition. They don't need him anymore. But anyways, you know, Sean Avery came out and called cops fat little pigs. We have somebody on the line that may or may not have been called this before. Drew Mandel, are you there?
You just call me a fat little pig.
I did not call you that, Drew. I asked if you've ever been called that. You know, people call names at elementary school and in junior high.
I certainly don't think I've ever been called a fat little pig. I mean, it's possible, I suppose, but I don't know of it ever happening. I suppose it's the first time for everything, and that's what friends are for. What can I say? How are you, boys?
Good, Drew. You know, Richie's just playing a little bit of fun, but we're glad to have you on. How's Kentucky, and what have you thought of the show so far?
First of all, you know, when you're on the show, you don't really get to sort of step away from the show and really listen to it. So, you know, as much as I miss being there with you guys, I've been able to listen as a fan for, you know, the most part, most of the show today, and it's been absolutely terrific. Just great insight as always. I mean, I don't need to blow smoke, too hot, considering, you know.
Easy there, Drew.
You guys have sounded great. I must say that, Richie, you've done a terrific job in my host seat, and Remus, you were doing a good job when you did it as well earlier in the show, but I'm sure our audience is eager to have me back next week.
Richie is Drew, Remus is Richie, and Finkel is Einhorn, and Einhorn's a man.
And then are the laces out?
Exactly. No, Drew, we absolutely missed you. We're excited to have you back. You're clearly, when I, you know, sit in this chair, and I've done it only a few times over the, I guess, 2.5 years or over that now that we've been on the air, it's certainly a difficult task, and you make it look very easy. Drew, you have time to join us for Cheers and Jeers?
I always have time to join you boys for Cheers and Jeers.
Here we go.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad
boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Drew, you know, you obviously know what time of the show it is, Drew, but we put you a little bit on the spot, so we're going to throw it to Remus first, and then, Drew, you're going to follow it up.
Good. Sounds I've been good. Thinking about this cheer for a while. I'm going to cheer Brendan Shanahan in the NHL. You know what? While some of these rules may seem a bit ridiculous, and we can debate them here till we're blue in the face, because, you know, you do get blue in the face when you do that, but I think it's important to, you know, look at ways to improve the game. You know, there may be ways that are possible out there. It's good to have an open mind and think of new ways to solve your problems. So I like this research and development camp. It's a good idea.
Drew.
You know what? I'm going to cheer hockey fans wherever they may be. The reason I say that is I was out for lunch today in downtown Frankfort, Kentucky, and lo and behold, I ended up having a pretty decent hockey conversation with a guy originally from Boston, big Bruins fan. So, you know, we got to talking about that. I was from Winnipeg, and we got to talking hockey. So I'm going to cheer hockey fans. You never know where you're going to run into a hardcore hockey fan, as I found out earlier this afternoon.
Well, Drew, before I cheer, I got to know, and I think the entire world wants to know, what did you have for lunch?
I had a chicken salad sandwich, and let me tell you, it was delicious.
Pretty good.
Okay, exactly. You know, we had Wade Davison on at 6:05, and we're actually going to go to the MTS Iceplex, you know, in about 3 or 4 minutes, mm-hmm. drive there, and catch the rest of the game. So I'm going to cheer Wade Davison and everyone who's had a hand in the Believe in the Goal Foundation. That obviously includes Todd Davison, who was the whole reason for this game and charity foundation. So I'm going to cheer Todd Davison for coming on the show in the 6 great years that they've had, you know, putting on this charity hockey event.
You know, as you stole my cheer. So I'm actually going to go on top of that. You talked about the people planning the event tonight, and that's we're going to right away. But also the players who take part in it. I mean, you know, the event, people go to see the NHL players. The NHL players obviously don't do this for any kind of money. It's their time. I know that, Remus, you flew in here with Jonathan Toews on Monday, so he flew in from Chicago to play in this game. And there's many other players who I'm sure did the same, and they're giving back to the community, and they should be given credit for that. And, of course, as you said, to Wade Davison for doing this and everybody else involved and his brother's honor. Certainly a tremendous event. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Thursday, August 11th edition. I'm going to say thank you to our guests, Kyle Kozier, Illegal Curve scouting correspondent, the aforementioned Wade Davison from the Believe in the Goal Foundation, Jim Fox from the Los Angeles Kings color commentator for Fox and Prime Sports in Los Angeles, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen, for producer Tim Debenham, Michael Remus, Ezra Ginsberg, of course, Drew Mandel on the line in Kentucky. I'm Richard Pollack. I want to wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for Serious Hockey Talk Thursday, August 18th, right after H&L. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.